like in their teens or something, start developing electric powers, and it starts like a sort of upheaval in like society and gender norms, etc.
Electricity.
Like, well, because now they have power.
So it's like bioluminescence.
Kind of like she did like quite a bit of research, I guess, on electric eels and stuff. Mm. So
I wasn't far off with the fish thing.
Yeah. Mm. It's a quick read, in my opinion. And I think they're going to be developing it into a TV show. It's got some things that, like, you can definitely see the influence of Margaret Atwood, if you've read any of her stuff or watched The Handmaid's Tale.
I've seen a couple episodes of it. It was really dark.
Yeah, I mean, there was...
You haven't seen it?
I haven't watched it. I've read the book, like, a long time ago. And, like I said, trying to, I don't know, watching lighter shit.
Yeah.
So
The Good Place. Hannah, you're going to like it.
It's going to be great.
I think I'm like
excited.
It.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Game of Owns. It's time to talk about A Song of Ice and Fire.
All bets are off.
The beauty about being the editor is like you get to
do whatever you get to be I want.
Like, I don't know. I can do whatever I want.
The best thing about these in-person episodes is that it doesn't have to be edited at all. There's no like awkward Skype lag. If you don't know something, which is going to happen a lot tonight for me, just so you guys know, then you can just brush it off your shoulder. You're like, I just didn't remember that thing. But when you're online, I feel like there's a lot of temptation to like, well, we could stop and figure that out. But
right. That's true.
It throws off our flow.
This is
a lot.
More like just like hanging. So if we forget stuff, it's not that big of a deal.
I like recording in person though. Thanks for coming and hanging out with us tonight.
Wait, is this for real?
Yeah, we're going.
No! Yeah, okay, it is for real.
Like, talk show again. Talk show.
Wait, I take back everything I said about not knowing everything.
Welcome to the podcast. Here's the real introduction. Everybody, we've never done a real introduction on the show, by the way. I don't think we've ever done the names and stuff at the top of it.
Well,
yeah, no, that's not really our vibe.
My name is Zach. This is Hannah. And today we have Eliana from Girls Gone Canon.
And Maester Monthly.
And Maester Monthly, a previous guest on the podcast, coming back. But tonight, this is the first episode we've recorded with you in person.
I mean, how many episodes have you guys done in person? The last one was your first chapter.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually true.
That's true.
So, really?
Way to come back at me.
We're really getting it up to grad level.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
You really are. I know we do a lot of, like, TV show episodes in person, but here we are.
To everybody listening, there's a full moon tonight, like a wolf moon, I hear. So this is going to be an interesting evening. Gravity's pulling us in many directions. Did we turn off that heat?
Yeah, we turned off
that
heat.
Hannah has the world's loudest apartment, by the way.
I know. What can I say?
We're talking about Cersei 10, and we're talking about Jaime 7 from our Feast with Dragons reading order. These are the last two chapters that we have in A Feast for Crows, except for the Samwell chapter that we put at the very end. This is like a lot of pressure. Because there's no more Feast for Crows.
But it's also no pressure because, like we said before we were starting, we're just hanging. So zero pressure at all, but also a lot of pressure. So like, okay, everybody.
Did you guys like the chapters?
I actually did.
You actually liked them?
Yeah.
That's good.
I find that the Jaime Cersei chapters, especially like together, they're very fun.
Yes. When you pair these two together specifically as well, George wrote these. And
side by side?
He wrote these side by side, which happens sometimes in our reading order, but not every time. We did the Brienne chapter in one episode instead of splitting it in pairs like we have. We originally made the reading order to sort of complement how we were going to go through it on the podcast with pairs.
Yeah.
And it worked for a while, but when we got to that Brienne chapter, it was like, we need to just talk about this.
We spent an hour talking about the Brienne chapter.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Like, what made you decide to do that single Brienne chapter as a single, and how has that thrown off the rest of your reading order? If it has at all, like, there were plans.
Yeah, there were plans.
Well, it's one of those things where I felt like we just had so much to say about that specific chapter. We were recording in person, and we just talked for an hour about it. And it's like one of those things where then do we put out a two-hour episode and rush the next chapter, or do we just like let this one be a Brienne thing? And because we're so close to the end of Feast for Crows, I feel like we can throw it off a little bit better than we could in the earlier episodes. So to be honest, there was no real rhyme or reason behind it. It just kind of ended up that way.
We were like, whenever I read it, I know that I felt like it felt like the right thing to do. And I told you that. I was like, hey, do you want to read one less chapter and take one less group of notes and really focus on this one? And she was like, great idea.
Giving it space to breathe. I mean, like, I know that Chloe and I definitely do that. So,
yeah.
Especially because we were like, Sansa's a girl. We're going to just like draw this out as long as possible.
I'm so jealous of the approach that you guys have taken with your podcast. I know we've talked about on our show before, but we should tell everyone that's listening that you guys are now, how many episodes did you say into Girls Gone Canon?
I actually didn't because I told you that I don't know how many episodes we are.
It was like 30 something. It was right up there. Right up there. With
that's a good amount.
But
that's all right. It's when you have your life together, right?
Yeah, you say you're like, mid-30s,
yeah. What you say, you cross 50, like now we have to keep doing this forever?
No, we cross 50, you know, if we just keep up this pace, which means we do not take a break, we should reach our 50th episode when we reach our 1-year anniversary, and therefore, this is it.
That's so perfect.
We're committed now. Well, unless we fuck it up.
Likely. It is likely.
I believe in you guys.
People get sick. Things happen.
Things do happen.
I was just about to literally say
that's what also thing. What happens in your we could have a midlife crisis.
You get hit by a car.
That's true. But maybe I'll get $600,000 out of it.
That's true. I wish I could get $600,000.
You might.
Here's my question about what are you guys going to do when the season's on?
I don't know.
Do you think you're going to keep the same?
What do you think?
The ice is just clinking. I don't know. We haven't actually talked about it. I assume we're just going to keep doing whatever we're doing.
But like, plus like the show perspective is going to, would probably just lend an interesting like thread into what you guys are already doing. You know?
Thought about that? Maybe doing, I don't think anyone would be mad at you guys if you did it.
I know.
I don't know that we've thought about it at all. To be honest, we've literally never had the discussion at the moment.
It's coming up fast.
It is coming up fast.
I guess, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. We have floated the idea of doing, a read or a separate series of the If You Give a Mouse a Cookie books.
Whoa.
Oh my gosh.
This is a very different vibe. But I don't know actually that's what we're doing about the show.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
What you guys are doing on Girls Gone Canon is I'm so jealous of. You're going through the Song of Ice and Fire books, but point of view specifically. How has that been so far? You're about to start Theon, you said. You started out with Ned.
We started with Ned, then we did Barristan, then Quentin, then Arianne, then Sansa and Theon.
Jesus.
It was actually really encouraging because someone like recently commented in one of our Patreon comments. They said, I see it. I'm starting to see like the pattern and the logic behind the order that you
put
together.
That's so exciting.
I was like, yes.
That's so exciting.
You really like meticulously planned that out. And yeah, we're starting Theon, so that's super exciting. He's such a fantastic character.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get him in this book, in Feast. But yeah, so we're starting that. It's exciting. It's been fun doing it through a character reread. And I say this every time. I'm surprised that someone hasn't done a podcast about it before because everyone, a lot of people write their essays or do their analyses, right, by reading through a single character's POVs first. And a lot of people do their rereads that way anyway.
I've never done it.
I mean, you have, what, X amount of episodes until the end of this reread.
Yeah.
You could switch to a character reread if you wanted to do another reread.
That is an interesting
reread forever.
Maybe
Turtles
just,
all the way down.
It is Turtles completely all the way to the end of all this goddamn shit.
You can also reread that.
maybe like, because we were talking, Hannah's thinking about doing the audiobook game. She's never really stepped up. I mean, you can tell people.
I don't listen to the audiobooks. That's my
or like any, right?
I don't either.
Yeah, I'm not a big audiobook person. And so I'm just trying to think of different ways that I can, as we're gearing for Winds of Winter eventually, how can I know as much about A Song of Ice and Fire before we dive into Winds of Winter
like
as possible?
Like you're cooking breakfast and you've got Roy Dotrice like doing brain in the background.
Like, I'm like asleep.
That's
and
a good
it's
brain,
like
right?
Internally getting through my mind.
You haven't listened to it?
I haven't listened to the audiobooks.
Oh.
I'm the same as Hannah.
So, yeah.
I'm bad at focusing.
Do you know the pyromancer from the show?
The guy who gives the
wildfire to Tyrion. Cersei first meets him in the series, and then Tyrion later goes down and says, "Let's work with me."
Haley's Hallis or something like that.
Oh yeah, what did they name him? No, I completely forgot.
Whatever.
Great.
I don't know what they named him.
He's the narrator of the audiobooks. He passed away, I think, a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. I forget. Roy Dotrice.
I think it was about a year ago, something like that. Yeah.
But he was
he was in the show.
Yes. How cool is that? How cool is that?
That's awesome. Good for him.
That's a nice little nod.
Everyone loves him, I think, from my understanding. I don't think there's like a love or hate. I think there's like a, even if you don't agree.
You're wrong.
with his pronunciations, there's still, like, I don't know, an endearing factor. From what I hear,
he says Brian.
I mean, George says Dothraki, and that's wrong.
Yeah, you're like, why do you do that?
Yeah, so all the bets are off.
I'm like, George, you're wrong. I know you wrote it, but you're wrong.
Do you know if George calls it Aswaf or Aswaf? Because you're the one who planted Aswaf in my head, and I've been
settle
trying to
the age old debate.
Spread it around a little bit.
I got it from Michael, bookshelf stud from Maester Monthly at Balticon.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to say Asoif, and then
Asoif.
Turns out Michael said Aswaf, and I was like, that's hilarious.
That's yeah.
It's all because I get to say ass.
Yes.
It didn't sound
yes.
goofy.
Yes, exactly. That's perfect. I'm excited that you guys are so deep into it. That's really cool.
It's fun, yeah. And you guys are super deep into it, too.
This combined reading order, like I said, we have one A Feast for Crows chapter left. And so sorry for all the preamble at the top of the episode, everyone. But, you know, we pressed record and this is what we're talking about.
Zach and I are drinking.
Yeah, we're having a little bit of a, we don't know what it's called. I was inspired by you making, I'm sorry, I was.
Oh, right.
You made that drink at Ice and Fire Con. It was Maester Aemon in a bucket or in the barrel.
Yeah.
And you put the Sour Patch Kid in it.
I need to really try and make that fancier probably at some point. I want to do something with fire, but also I'm not the person.
I think you can
pull it
off.
None of us when we're drunk are the person who should be fucking with fire.
That's true, but we have, like I said, we have that Samwell chapter left. But
oh, yeah.
For the rest of the reread, that screenshot that I gave you that had like the two, I texted you that had like the two chapters at the top and then a bunch of orange chapter names.
Oh, yeah.
That's the A Feast for Dragons website. We're at the on the last column where it's basically A Dance with Dragons chapters chronologically because we incorporated stuff like the weather, which we see in the Jaime chapter that we're talking about today when snow starts to fall in Riverrun. And it's like, holy crap. If it's snowing in Riverrun, that means they might be seeing the same kind of precipitation in King's Landing. So from all the chapters moving forward, when we go through A Dance with Dragons, it's going to be like what the weather will be sort of appropriate. Ideally, that's how we set it up. We'll find out as we go through how we like it. But this Jaime chapter like kind of like really made me feel the weather. And so that was sort of an off-topic thing. But for the rest of the reread are specifically A Dance with Dragons chapters. And thinking about maybe just doing one of those an episode instead of pairing those up. I don't know. It's an idea.
Unless you get more in depth.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. The Stone Art chapter was fun that way.
I mean, let's be real. When is the Winds of Winter going to come out? You have time.
Well, especially when we're talking about endgame type of stuff. I feel like earlier on in the series as a whole, when you pretty much know how these different scenarios are playing out, it's easier to couple them together. But as we're getting into the true like endgame theory, what's going to happen in Winds of Winter, what kind of repercussions are from these different character actions, like we don't have the answers like we have had the luxury of having, and so I think it just like lends itself to broader, bigger discussions that we really, I mean, we've had, but on much smaller scale as we've tried to stay confined within the chapter. So I think it's going to be interesting.
It's kind of like the whole topic of the show at all is like a filter in itself. There's like further filters with doing it in a reading order or like doing it in POVs in a specific way. And I didn't know that we were going to be able to be so patient with it because I just assumed at some point, like I think even when we were starting the Storm of Swords chapter by chapter, I was like, but Winds is going to come out in like 3 months. So we're going to have to put this on pause and we're never going to get through, you know, the other published books. But, you know, we're now at this point in the we're at the last Cersei chapter, which puts a hat on what I've described throughout this process and what I was really excited about when I read it for the first time. And what I was excited to talk about, like when we started the reread, when we got the first Cersei chapter in A Feast for Crows, and I felt like the tone of what we were about to run into was going to happen. And then we get to the Tower of the Hand exploding. And it's just the gothic, strange, like cruel, sad, troubled nature of her points of view in this book. And just how it's just like, it's just, it's kind of like a strange horror movie to me how it unfolds. And then when she walks in that chamber, just right outside that simple side chamber, how George describes it, like it's the meanest little room that they try to recreate for the show. If you remember the one that the High Sparrow captured Cersei in, when they transition from that room to the tall room where Osney Kettleblack is hanging. Our microphone's cut out, so if this point doesn't connect to the last, I'm sorry.
That works, right?
Yeah, that's great.
When they walk in the room and he's hanging from the ceiling, just Roy, I remember I was talking about Roy Dotrice. That's it. I was listening to it. And I was driving cross country, and I remember getting to that moment, and it was just like, I think I had been really naive about the whole story up until that point, even though a lot of horrible things have happened.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was just like, oh dear God.
Like, it's getting real.
This is happening to Cersei.
Yeah.
You know, when it's happening to Cersei, it's like, understandably, the danger in King's Landing has turned up a level. I know that we saw the all the bones scattered outside of the Great Sept of Baelor when she was arriving there and meeting the High Sparrow for the first time. And when she went to the Sept this time, it was a whole different story. It was like everyone was prepared for whatever this new regime is. Like they like went from being sort of like rowdy and dangerous to being more so organized and like targeted. And like, we have a very good idea about how we're going to handle this stuff once we get who we want, I guess, in our clutches, or at least we get the power that we want from them. And it's a lot of faith to put into someone, some guy, to send there to go confess to the High Sparrow. That's a lot of faith you put in Osney Kettleblack. You know what I mean? That's crazy. Of course he talked. Of course he talked.
Yeah.
Wow.
Especially under all that.
And for it to all happen so fast, for it to have been like, at the beginning of the chapter, we find out that Margaery has been taken in custody, and I'm getting that right, right? That's what happened?
Yeah. We're all in her little, her and all her little pals.
Her and her cousins. It's all such a blur now at this point. And within, what was it, like 3 days, the next day Cersei was captured. And then on the third day, Qyburn visits and is like, oh, the Tyrells are on their way. They don't have email and text message and stuff. Like, this is all really serious. When they found out, they like left Storm's End immediately. You know, it was like, all right, what's going to happen? Like, Arryn Waters has the fleet outside in the Blackwater because they wanted to do that show of strength to show everyone inside the capital that they still rule the city, even though the Sparrows are running amok, basically. Mm-hmm. They've already taken off, maybe to go help Fagon. It's a pretty crazy chapter. So that's my take on it. It was a crazy chapter.
It was a crazy chapter. Yeah. It felt karmic, though.
Yeah, there is something when she's going insane in the cell, when she gets, or in the cell, when she gets finally captured, where it's just like, whoa. Maybe you deserved all that. You're mad. You're nodding. You're like, you're happy about this too. You're like, I'm glad it happened to Cersei, not me.
Well, it would never happen to you, Hannah.
I know. Please pray. I just think it's neat because the chapter starts off with her in this, like the first sentence of the second paragraph says, Cersei sat beneath the Iron Throne clad in green silk and golden lace. And it's, by the time we get to the end of the chapter, she is sitting in rags, and just like this whole idea of how she sees her status and like how she views herself, and so much of that is tied to her glamour and her beauty and all of that kind of stuff. And so to really call out those, what she's wearing, I think at the beginning and then near the end, is just such a great way to tie the whole chapter and just really realize like the journey that we all go through with Cersei.
Such a journey in a small place, too.
Yeah.
But, like, you can tell the story of this chapter just through the clothing that she's wearing. Because, like, as you said, she's wearing, like, green silk and golden lace. And she's, like, out here. She's with her power move. She's like, I have all these emeralds on my fingers.
Yeah.
And she's like,
I'm winning.
I'm winning.
Yeah.
And then and she thinks that that's the right move at that time. And we see a lot of other characters throughout the series do that as... Yeah, flaunting it. But then later on, she's like, oh, but I got to dress demurely for the High Sparrow. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said,
that's so
then they put
great.
Her in like rough spun. They put her in the same thing that they put Margaery in.
Yeah, yeah.
She tore it up at first. So she was naked for a while.
Yeah, and then shredded it.
Yeah, that's dark. I think that Cybil Westerling in the next chapter, I think she's wearing the same colors. I think she's wearing green and gold as well.
Oh.
In the next chapter, I might be wrong. I might be conflating the two, but she's, enjoying the same sort of benefits from life that Cersei does as well. But she's not in the You know, like they're in the pocket of the Lannisters at this point, right?
Yeah.
Sansa's interestingly, like, I think wearing a very, very similar dress to Cersei in Elaine 2. Mm-hmm. Or no, sorry. Sansa 2, Elaine 1, in A Feast for Crows. So I'm going to just read aloud.
What happens in that one? Yeah, go for it. Yeah,
that's a chapter where the Lords Declarant come up the Vale. Mm-hmm. And then Littlefinger's like, oh, by the way, what do you think happened? And Sansa's like, so yeah, Lyn Corbray's your paid man, right? And he's like, yeah, duh. But when Cersei wears that more modest gown to go meet with the High Sparrow, the way it's described is, in the end, she chose a soft woolen dress that covered her from throat to ankle with only a few small vines embroidered on the bodice and the sleeves in golden thread to soften the severity of its lines. Even better, brown would help conceal the dirt if she was made to kneel. And then for Sansa, the language for the dress she chooses there is, but in the end, so we have in the end both times, she remembered that Elaine was after all a bastard and must not presume to dress above her station. The dress she picked was lamb's wool, dark brown, and simply cut with leaves and vines embroidered around the bodice, sleeves, and hem in golden thread. So it's like almost
exactly the same.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting thing. Is that because the highborn fashion is sort of congruent amongst all of the minds, or do you think that that's more so that she spent time around Cersei, she like soaked in some of that flavor?
I've been wondering about this. It could be the other way, like maybe when you're more highborn and you're richer, you can commission custom gowns, whereas perhaps this more modest gown is something that was made not like hugely en masse because they didn't have what huge cotton machines or whatever, but it was made based on a template and many people. Yeah. More than one person had one, is my guess. I don't know.
How many people do you think were, because I'm thinking about Sansa now, in Winterfell making dresses, other than, you know, the people that were instructing these girls how to make them themselves? Like, do you think that there was, like a tradesman that was, like, selling dresses to people that lived in the town or people in, like, neighboring villages, like the Crofters village? Sure. They go inside Winterfell to buy dresses and stuff?
I'm sure.
I think, it was brought in through trade and stuff. I think they talked about it before, like, how Kat had commissioned a silken dress for Sansa and had it shipped in. But, like, this is, of course, still in the Eyrie, and the Eyrie and the Vale have, what, they have Gulltown and White Harbor. They have some very big points of trade that are close to them, so.
And then you have to carry it all the way up that damn mountain.
Oh my god, it's such an effort.
Just a quick sidebar, so we're dumb. Watching season 6 for Rewatch the Throne, and young Sweet Robin was, they were down in, they were in Runestone, and he was doing the target practice, and Jon Royce is there and all these other grizzled men who are just really upset that that's their job, that they have to like take care of this boy, like stand around him and guard him for no reason. They're like, anyway, this is not fun for us. Peter Baelish arrives and he yells, "The protector of the Vale," you know, almost ironically. And what was my point? What were we talking about? I just got lost.
They have to go back up that mountain.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. He was like, Baelish like turns a phrase as like Jon Royce's accusation about Sansa getting married to Ramsay instead of going to the Fingers, which all this again is off topic sort of, but Sweet Robin goes, should we throw him out of the moon door? And I was just like, you want to travel all the way back to the gates of the moon and then go up the mountain? Is that really what we're doing here? But you know, there's fast travel in the TV show, so maybe it's worth it just for that scene, just to throw him out the moon door.
Well, that was the time, you know, when we cared about travel.
Yeah, we don't care about that kind of thing anymore. We don't have time for travel.
Do you think, since we're on the topic, do you think we're going to have a lot of that, like, sort of wiggly around, sort of, like, time-changing
in season 8?
In the last season?
That's going to be all of what season 8 is.
On one hand, yeah, we kind of have to. On the other hand, they got so much shit for it, and it seems like David and Dan have tried to respond to an extent to the criticisms that they receive when they get them with each season, but I don't know.
Most people are also kind of starting to come around the same spots, though, so maybe we won't have as many places to jump between.
Well, they're just fuck it, it's our last season. Who cares?
We can get
senior year.
Senioritis.
Exactly.
That's really
maybe
funny.
A little bit. Anyway, back to this chapter.
The wasps were growing so loud that the queen could hardly hear herself think. I do hope the little queen and her cousins enjoyed those rides of theirs.
I laughed out loud at that line.
That's so negative.
<it's> so hilarious.
Those miserable girls. I hope they enjoyed those rides that I coerced into being a slave. Oh my God.
I love the line when she thought about suddenly the Tyrell rose does not smell so sweet.
Oof.
So good.
Well, since we're calling out some Cersei moments, I'm going to go right to the beginning of the chapter when she was talking about Septa Moel. This was a pretty deep cut. It says, first off, George describes Septa Moel as a white-haired harridan, which I had to look up, and I'm going to look up right now for everyone because I don't know if everyone knows what harridan means. It's like you read the word and you're like, I get what you're saying because that word looks like something that's not good. It's a strict, bossy, or belligerent old woman, bullying
like a treat.
Old harridan. And Cersei says, this is what she thinks of Septa Moel, who's just there to help her.
Isn't everybody?
This one,
trying.
This one still has her maidenhead, I'll wager. Cersei thought, though by now it's hard and stiff as boiled leather. Oof.
It's mean.
Yeah, that's rough. Mean. That's dark.
That's rough and dark and leathery.
But I mean, that's like the central conflict of the beginning of this chapter is whether or not Margaery has one or not.
Yeah, that's, yeah. It all kind of fits. Thanks, George, for reminding us about that. No one wants to ask the other questions about like, why Margaery might have failed the inspection. It could be a number of things. We're just not talking about that, right?
If we want to get into like reproduction kind of stuff.
I mean, you know.
Let's do it.
I mean, she's on trial for God's sake. Like,
very reasonably not be intact for literally no reason.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
She's on trial, like basically. She's basically on trial at this point. She might be inspected by Grand Maester Pycelle. At least the idea was
yeah.
given in this chapter. It was like, I think that you should do a full scan. Mm-hmm. Like, wasn't it Cersei who was like, Grand Maester Pycelle will do his own check?
Yeah.
She
yeah.
probably thought she was doing him a solid.
Or some, my gosh.
Some weird shit.
Well, I think the thing is if Margaery, I think the moon tea thing is the thing that kind mm-hmm. of pushes everything over the edge, because I feel like anybody could maybe argue for a maidenhead being intact or not for a million different things. Because I think there's some point where like Cersei talks about how you could be riding a horse and that can get rid of it. You know, there's like right. millions yeah. of different ways.
Like she says that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can't remember at what point, but I think it's the moon tea thing. And however, I think we can kind of get into what that means, but that's the piece of evidence that then pushes it over the edge of like, okay, well, if it's not there and she's also brewing moon tea, then obviously there's something bigger going on here because all the pieces add up. And so.
But is the moon tea even for her?
Well, that's, I think yeah, that's the big
question.
The big question is if it's for her, if she's asking for it for someone else, if someone is asking her to ask for it to like put her in this position. I don't know what you guys think. But
I mean, I had to buy my friend some Plan B once. Maybe this shouldn't go on the podcast.
We've all
I don't
been
know.
There.
Like, it wasn't for me. It was for yeah. my friend. And the guy gave me, like, a smirk. And I was like, fuck you, dude.
He gave you a smirk?
Yeah.
That's so lame. So
I was like, excuse me.
Where were you? Like, it's like a
well,
CVS?
Well, it was just because, yeah, because, like, my ID hadn't been, I think my friend was afraid that her parents would see if it, like, showed up or something under her name or whatever.
Like on a credit so statement or a debit
I don't
statement.
Know. Yeah, something like that.
For some reason, you had to do it for your friend.
Yes.
Got such it. A good friend.
Got it. That's nice.
I am a good friend.
I mean, it's you would go to the Grand Maester Pycelle and ask for moon tea on behalf of your friend. You've already proven it.
I would.
It. Yeah. Well, that's good. Maybe that's what Margaery was doing.
Well, that's what I'm... So, I mean, I just feel like Cersei is getting everything that she wants at the beginning of this chapter and is extremely thrilled and says something about how this is everything she could have ever hoped for. The queen let it wash over her for a few heartbeats, savoring the sounds of the little queen's disgrace. I mean, what else could she ever need?
And she's so disgraced.
I think that whether Cersei is like smart enough to kind of go the back channel way to get this moon tea planted, or if something else is going on, I don't know. But I don't know if it's Margaery. I'm pretty convinced that it's not Margaery herself asking for it for her.
Seems like such an
needs.
Obvious mistake. She's proven at yeah. this point that she's such an adept player of the game in surviving in King's Landing, you know?
I mean, you gotta look out for your girls. I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone needed moon tea, and I don't know that it was necessarily her.
Who among us?
Do you think that they needed it, or perhaps it was like a misdirection on behalf of Margaery, maybe directed by Olenna? I mean, they're not above it. They killed, mm-hmm. or Olenna killed Joffrey.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, it could definitely be a misdirection. I don't know what, but like also I've
just
a lot of things go over my head.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, welcome to the club.
Chaos is a ladder.
Exactly. It's not a pit. That's as far as I've figured out. Got it. Definitely not a ladder. I guess we're trying to find out what
perhaps
it is.
It's a tea.
It might be a tea. It might be a freshly brewed moon tea because it sure caused a lot of problems in this story right now. You got to feel for her, though. That's like the nail in the coffin at the beginning of this chapter for Cersei. It's just like, yeah, well, why else would she be getting all that moon tea if not to, you know, take care of all of her misdeeds just with everyone? That's the thing. It's like over the top. It's like she's sleeping with everyone.
Right.
Like, and it doesn't, someone says, like, and it, she discriminated, like, she didn't even care if, like, they're highborn or lowborn or their wealth or whatever. It was like she was just sleeping with anyone. So it's like, dear God, people.
Which I mean, like,
on thick.
If she wants to do that.
Right.
Fine by me, but also at the same time, like,
there's
that doesn't sound
rules.
Believable.
Especially when I feel like for somebody like Cersei, who truly, I mean, we're talking about it just a little while ago about our guy Osney. I mean, Cersei has her own little secrets that could so easily be come out into the open in a conversation like this. Seems like such a dangerous space to be playing in. And I guess, like, as a woman at that time, it's the easiest way to accuse somebody of something terrible is you can just like slap on this idea that they're sleeping around a lot and so they must be some awful person. But I feel like Cersei's not really one to talk very much here. Yeah,
she doesn't have a lot of self-awareness. She's like making fun of the idea of Maggie the Frog.
Cersei doesn't have self-awareness?
Oh, what? What?
What?
Wait, you're saying that I don't because I'm just saying that like it's a point?
Well, I guess it's bad for a queen, right? Because the whole point is you need to be able to ascertain who the father is.
For sure, lineage.
But it isn't necessarily, I think, bad for a low-born woman. Like, the idea of sexuality was different back then. They were like, yeah. I was reading, I don't know, something that a medievalist was saying. They were like, actually, sexuality for women was viewed differently back then. They were like, women aren't pure. They're like, they're insatiable.
Really?
What are we going to do about them? They just want sex. All it's so
that's
hard.
Actually interesting.
That reminds me of that showism Dario quote where he's like, I was should have been born a Dothraki.
Oh, yeah.
He sees
yeah.
them like fucking and via Dothraki and he forgets everything. He's like, this is the way to be.
It's all an uproar. So, I mean, I feel like the consensus that we've semi-reached here is that there's something else going on with the moon tea other than Margaery needing it for herself.
She's got this deal going on with Lady Meriwether where she's like talking about, it's like everything's going according to plan and she's simultaneously inviting her Lady Tana Meriwether's son to come be the king's best friend. And it's like, dude, she's going to leave right after this. Like, you're putting Margaery in like she's the queen and she might not make it out of this in some way. Like, I don't know. This is just like a really strange disconnect. And we see that when she's standing outside the Tower of the Hand and it's just exploding in a violent way. And we're like, dude, this is extreme for one person to have orchestrated. There's a lot of us here and like you carry a lot of weight and power and that's cool. And your personality is huge and we all kind of deal with it because we have to, but you're blowing up the Tower of the Hand.
Yeah, she's very extra.
She's so extra. I mean, that's a lot of wild shit, and she just doesn't understand when she's talking to her closest consort that, which, by the way, who is she? You know, this is the last Cersei chapter in the Feast for Crows, and it's like, all right, we're going to put a button on it. There's going to be no more Tyene and Meriwether, as far as I know. And who is she?
Yeah.
This is her best friend. Who is she? She sleeps in the same bed as Cersei. I don't know who she is. We need one of those drawings. We were finding those spray drawings.
Yeah,
we need an artist rendition of Tyene Meriwether. If anyone's listening, they'd like to put that together, please.
But I think even Cersei, you go ahead.
You go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think even Cersei kind of has that question at some point in the chapter of, wait, who is my bestie? And what is she, who's to say what she won't tell if she comes to the point where she's being tortured or asked to kind of give up everything? So.
Which, like, yeah, as you're saying, like, Cersei has no self-awareness. Like, she's all like, yeah, this is what happens to my enemies. And then she's like, oh, by the way, Tyene Meriwether, when are you going to bring your son to King's Landing
to
hang out with my son?
And Tyene's
like,
yeah.
Oh, hell no.
I hope I never cross you.
Oh, fuck no.
Yeah, it's a crazy deal. You gotta, it's, you know, those kinds of people that when you're talking to them, they don't really listen. They're like, oh, I used to live in on the West Coast and you go to a lot of parties. And people would kind of like look over your shoulder and just kind of be like looking around for like the next person to talk to. And was like, oh, this is happening to me. Okay. You know, like you're not offering them anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of what the deal is with everyone that she's ever known.
For Tana Meriwether?
For Cersei. It was like, she doesn't like, it's just kind of like, okay, well, no more of her then. But she was so important. She was sleeping in the same bed as you.
She knows everything.
Knows everything.
You know, that's like not somebody you can dismiss, so.
And she was able to get away. Mm-hmm. That's something that's interesting to me. Like, did she sell Cersei out? That's something I wondered.
I haven't thought about that. Do you think she did?
I don't know.
She might just slip through the cracks, though.
I just like to throw out ideas.
Okay, good. I like
that. I just like generate ideas.
That's
good. For example, Donza, okay?
Donza. Dantos and Sansa, huh?
No. Sansa and Daenerys. I mean, the discourse needed saving a few weeks ago. Everyone was so mad about that teaser trailer. I was like, we need to change the ships up. So
that's a good idea, actually. Shake up the boat a little bit. Yeah. I like Dansa.
I mean, a lot of people have been talking about, just throw ideas out.
That's smart. It's like you can be a wild card for everything.
Oh, wild cards also George R. R. Martin series.
I just was thinking about George. I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast yet, but you remember the Fire and Blood event? Mm-hmm. You were there. We had a good time.
You were there. You were with me. It was
a good time.
I was very drunk. I was quite hungover the next day.
You had the Johnny White Walker drink.
That was garbage. Sorry, everyone.
You guys need like an ebook of all of your con.
That's
drinks.
What this is. That's what. Oh, like a PDF guide
Of like these are all the cool drinks that we've made at parties.
This was not a cool drink. I didn't make it. It was literally poured from the bottle.
Yeah, she poured like a glass full of.
It wasn't that much. You were definitely exaggerating. I didn't have enough to pour you a glass.
I guess you're right. Well, it depends on how big a glass is. It's like, I don't know, something like that. But either way,
trying to be a good hostess.
I had to match it tonight, and I was like, there's a lot of pressure. Like, she brought around this really like sought after. Exclusive drink. You know, it's really crazy how far everything has gone. When this all started, it was like the whisper of HBO booking a brewery in the country to make a craft beer that was titled after a Game of Thrones thing. Oh. I was like, oh my God. We got the brewmaster, Phil Lionheart, on the podcast to talk about it years ago. We're like, please tell us about this beer. I was so geeked out of it. I was like, this is a TV show that I like. This is a book that I like.
Yeah.
Why are you making beer for it? And he was like, well, they paid us and we have these ideas. And I was like, oh, great, cool. But now there's just, I saw a map and I sent it to one of my friends, my buddy Phil, who started Winter is Coming, Winter Phil. Mm-hmm. I just sent him a picture of a map of all the different like bottles that you bought that you found.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just like scattered across the map. Just here's all of this Game of Thrones merchandise. Do you guys want it? Well, here it is. How many of those do you have?
It was like a marathon. By the fourth drink, I was like, oh shit, I have to drink four more of these.
Yeah.
You decided to do them all in one. That's actually part of the reason why I was going to say you guys should come over. I just didn't think my partner was up for that tonight.
Because he's recovering some other time.
Flu. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to have them for a while because they cost like $1 million, right?
No, not really.
You got them on sale?
So I think that's what you said. I got them on Black
Friday.
Let's
hear the discount.
The Virginia alcohol stores are all sold through the ABC stores. There's like a state sanctioned like store that you get them all through. And I got like a bunch of them all at once on the same day on Black Friday. I got most of them on Black Friday when places had discounts. So yes, I got them discounted because I'm all about the deals.
You gotta get the deals.
Yeah.
I think my like weird roundabout point was when he was talking about Night Flyers during that.
I haven't watched it yet. Have you?
No, I haven't.
But remember, or read it.
Remember when he was talking about it and he was like, guess they made a series out of it. He was like, I think it was either an email from them directly or probably went through his management. I can't remember exactly. He didn't like tell us explicitly what the chain was, but he was like, I got told that something I wrote a long time ago is being optioned to a series or is going to be a series on Sci-Fi. And he's like, because I signed something back in the 80s.
He forgot that.
Yeah.
And that's a good reminder to anyone. A lot of people have been inspired to start their own things after the series.
Do your paperwork, people.
Yes. I believe in you. Your shit's going to want to be picked up. But do your paperwork.
Ain't that the truth?
Ain't that the truth? No, let them shout until they're hoarse. It will not sway the sparrow. He only listens to the gods. There was a certain irony in his high holiness, having an angry mob encamped upon his doorstep. Should I read it like Dan Carlin?
Yes.
Since just a mob had raised him to the crystal crown, which he promptly sold. The faith has its own knights now. Let them defend the sept. Oh, and close the city gates as well. No one's to enter or leave King's Landing without my leave until all of this is done and settled. As you command, Your Grace. This was before, obviously, all of this went down. She just created, like, her own perfect hell and locked herself in that cell, basically.
It was so dumb.
Jesus.
It's so wild that you don't see the pieces fall. And I know that we kind of have that hindsight view into this whole thing, and it's so easy for us to say, well, you should have an XYZ, and I'll come to the end of it. But I feel like even still, as all of these decisions that were being made to change the laws and open things up so that they could even arm themselves, period, everybody else around her thought it was the stupidest thing they'd ever heard. And now here we are, like, in real, genuine danger of getting swallowed up by everything that's going on with the High Sparrow. And we were talking about this with on a rewatch about things that scare me in A Song of Ice and Fire. Like, things in Game of Thrones that are, like, scary and threatening. It's like, you can't truly be afraid of someone like Ramsay Bolton when you have the High Sparrow also playing in the same space, who's, like, wielding real power and, like, has the masses on his side and has armies of devout, militant people. I just, like, don't understand how anybody ever thought any of that was a good idea.
Oof. Yeah, that's the fallacy of this book for Cersei, right? Giving those powers that was so long ago forbidden, and now we're seeing, it's just all about the Maggie the Frog prophecy, right? And you know, the focus was on Sansa at some point, and then the focus was on, well, I don't think it's Sansa, I think it's Margaery who's here to supplant me, or whatever it was supposed to be. What's the deal with that? Like, do you think that it's mostly about her paranoia with what she was told by that seer, or do you think that she's just trying to be Tywin's daughter because he's dead and she, I mean, it's obviously some kind of combination, but what do you think the governing thing for her is? Like, she just has so much pride, she doesn't want to be under anyone's foot, or is it that she's just so bent on changing what might be her future? Like, maybe she doesn't want Tywin to die that badly, so she thinks she can change it.
Yeah, like you said, it's a combination of all of it. It's like, what Cersei wants is power. Power just in its ultimate form. And she saw Tywin as having power. She saw Tywin as being able to do anything because people feared him. And fear is, of course, a type of power. But as we see through the Northern storyline, honor and duty and, like, the faith one has in a leader is another kind of power. And Cersei hasn't learned that. And so she tries to inspire fear. She thinks that she's this great politician, even though she hasn't really learned anything. She, as Hannah said, rearms the faith, but she hasn't quite studied. She doesn't have that whole knowledge of power.
Why they took it away.
Knowledge is power thing. Yeah, she doesn't understand all the things that we now know, because we have Fire and Blood, of the difficulties Maegor and Jaehaerys had. And shit, Maegor had fucking dragons. Jaehaerys had dragons, and they had difficulty.
Oh, yeah.
They had the raw power that Cersei craves. And that's why it's so important to her to have Tommen. It's not just that. She wants power to change fate.
Mm-hmm.
But in fixating on all of that, rather, that's what makes it sort of like this ironic tragedy, almost like this Grecian tragedy, right? The more she fixates on that prophecy, the way that Oedipus, like, tried to avoid his fate of sleeping with his mother, the more he just spiraled himself. He propelled himself into ending up, like, killing his father and sleeping with his mother. That's how it works in Cersei's story. The more she tries to avoid it, the more she digs herself into that hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
digs her heels in.
What do you do then, if not to avoid it? Like, what would, like, have been, do you think, the right thing for her to do at some point along this process? Like, even from the beginning of A Feast for Crows, like, let's say after Tywin was murdered.
Well, we talk about how she doesn't even know, we don't know who she's surrounding herself with, because she doesn't really have anybody that she can truly.
Except Jaime, and he's gone. That's why she writes the letter to him.
Well,
right?
Except Jaime, which we get to at the end of the Jaime chapter, we could talk about. Jaime is not only, like, gone physically, but he just is gone seemingly mentally as well, from, like, being anybody who's going to give her any sort of real love and support. And that was the last person in her life that was really, truly able to, like, not necessarily reason with her, but come with her on a level that she would, like, listen to and respect. And so I think that that's her major downfall, is that she doesn't surround herself with people who are actually going to give her real insight into what's happening. If she doesn't want to be the kind of person to, like, read up on history, then she's got to get somebody by her side who she's not going to make fun of all the time and, like, dismiss constantly to keep her abreast. Like, she has this mentality of it's me against the world. And mm-hmm. that's just, like, not – you look at any other great leader and that's the opposite of what they have. I mean, they've all got a pretty solid squad around them teaching them and – what's the word I'm thinking of?
Like counseling?
Counseling them and mm-hmm.
like a small council should do.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Instead of just being a puppet race for all of your weird ideas.
Yeah, or somebody to like boost your ego or something. And so it's an interesting kind of glimpse into like power and what it actually means and all that kind of thing.
God, how fun must it have been for George R. R. Martin to make it to a Feast for Crows and just to be able to like put a bunch of randos in King's Landing doing random shit?
Yeah.
Like right now, per the end of this chapter, and we learned this from Qyburn on the third day that he visits, Harris Swift is mm-hmm. Hand of the King.
Which, and, like, okay.
Yeah, okay, fine, yeah. And Grandmaster Pycelle is also doing his – they're ruling the realm, essentially, together. And it makes me think about what you said about Ramsay. Ramsay's His window, his world, his orbit, whatever, is much smaller, right? But he can still like directly affect the lives of those around him. He can torture them. He can make them go outside of the gates in the cold, fend for themselves. He can straight up kill them if he wants to. Like basically all the same stuff that Cersei can do to people there. But the figurative nature behind it, like Ramsay has to, he says, I'm the Warden of the North. And that's based on the governance of King's Landing existing and giving him that power. So it's like, they're all like, I guess, technically wielding immediately the same level of danger based on like what they're willing to do to the people around them. But like Cersei doesn't have, again, the self-awareness to understand that it's happening. Like, it's just not a, like she's, they're at the capital, you know, like all of this is pretty important stuff. And when you start filling the small council with people that don't have the same amount of investment in it, like they sort of historically have throughout the books that we've seen, like the same people throughout a lot of this, the end of Robert's regime, and then like with Joffrey taking over, sort of like the same cast of characters. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Tyrells kind of came in maybe a moment of weakness, but they were always there. They're always the family that governed the Reach. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. they were very important. But we've got, like, Arianne Waters is making really big decisions based off of fear with a fleet full of Drummonds with power that may go in a direction that will probably go in a direction to fuel the enemies. It's like mm-hmm. that kind of stuff Ramsay can't do based off a mistake. Like, he's either going to win or lose. He doesn't have the same amount of power. Even though he can hurt people and kill people, it's like his reverberations are a lot smaller. And it's really dangerous to have someone like Cersei in that position. And I think that's why Kevin Lannister, obviously, like I'm saying obvious stuff to all of you listening, but I think that's why Kevin Lannister pieced the fuck out. And I think it's so interesting that the second all of this went down, they were like, oh my God, we got to get daddy back in the room. Like, let's write. Could you come back and just assume regency, please? Will you take care of this for us? Because we don't want to be held responsible for all this falling action. And the Iron Bank coming to collect its due.
Yeah.
Not a lot of planning ahead, huh?
Well, Ramsay's... he's a bully, and Cersei also is a bully, but she's ambitious.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he's also just wants to torture people. Like, he's not trying to...
Yeah, the next thrill that's right in front of him. That he's someone who wants that immediacy as opposed to...
Cersei's looking for, like, long-term...
Yeah.
Yeah. Forever grasp.
She's bad at the long-term planning because, like, the reason Harris Swift and Pycelle are able to do this miniature coup is because Cersei this whole time has been training Tommen to be like, yeah, just stamp the thing. You love stamping things, mm-hmm. right?
That's such a good catch, yeah.
And because that, he's just like, yeah, Tommen's like, yeah, I fucking love stamping things.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Me and my cats and just Pycelle like stamping
are
away.
Able to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's such a simple oversight.
It's exciting because I feel like this is just the same conversation we've been having for months and months and months as you've been reading through the chapter, because it's the same conversation that happens in literally every Cersei chapter in A Feast for Crows. And then we get to this chapter and there's a point where she feels fear for real, like a shiver running down her spine. How often has she felt that way? Or at the point where she literally turns and runs. Like,
oh God, that was crazy.
Yeah. We finally see all of the like the domino is like finally all fallen to this desperate letter that she sends Jamie.
Such patient setup. Please go on.
No, I mean, I don't really have anything else interesting or smart to say other than it's exciting to see her finally sort of see the consequences of her actions that have just been building and building and building, and like this having the same, what the heck is she doing? Why isn't she smarter? Why doesn't she have better people around her? Why isn't she looking at the consequences? And now she's actually starting to feel that fear that we were hoping she would feel chapters and chapters ago.
Hey, I want to say that we learn when Cersei turns and runs that Cersei can throw down.
Yes.
Apparently. What happened?
Well, she just can apparently, she's kind of decent at like
fighting. We can read
fighting.
It.
Yeah, please. Yeah,
please read Cersei's escape passage. I was like, oh shit. All right.
I just remember like.
It says Cersei whirled and ran.
Oh, yeah.
The High Septon tried to seize her, but he was some old sparrow and she was a lioness of the rock. She pushed him aside and burst through the door, slamming it behind her with a clang. The Kettle Blacks. I need the Kettle Blacks. I will send an Osprey with the gold cloaks. Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
I mean, that's so good, though.
It's like claws at someone's face.
Yeah, the four old septas blocked her way and clutched her with their wrinkled hands. She knocked one on the floor and clawed another one across the face and gained the steps. Then halfway up, she remembers Tyanna Meriwether. She ran as far as the sept, but no further. Yeah, I mean, it's her whirling that really caught my eye, and just because that's a very intense turn of phrase, literally turn of phrase. True. But
for Cersei, she's never whirled in the series so far.
No, she's always pretty poised and like cool and collected on the outside. You know what I mean? I know that her head's going a million miles an hour, but she's not running anywhere ever. So
George R. Martin is a fantastic writer.
It's just it continues to feed into that acceleration that we've just been feeling, and then to literally have her sprinting near the end of the chapter.
This paragraph is just like, it's 611 ebook pages into A Feast for Crows, and that's three books in. This is like the Cersei paragraph among paragraphs that he waited to write. Like, there's several more of these, but it's like,
sure.
Of her escaping and going through all of the things, like all the weaknesses that she's created, like Kettle Blacks, Tyanna Meriwether. It's just like, dude, it's so real, grasping. It's like how Brienne was feeling when she knew she was about to die. It was like all the truths that were coming to her head, all those last thoughts. That's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not for death. It's for her, like ego annihilation. It's on its way. She's not going to be able to be Cersei the lioness after they capture her and take her clothes.
Well, and then we get to the end of the chapter, and I think many things happen that we could go into, but I think the most important conversation that we need to have that ties into the next chapter is just the letter that she sends that is pretty raw and emotional, and I love you three times in it.
Yeah. That's the way to get your point across, right?
Covered is like, Qyburn, who is not technically privy to this, is like, you want to say I love you three times? He's like, are the rumors true?
Yeah.
Also, I want to throw up one last thing, sorry, before we like continue with this.
Yeah.
This Cersei chapter is Cersei's version of Ned 9, where Ned is like, yeah, I got it. We have it. We have our paper. She'll be a Robert's will. And then everything turns and he's
very
like,
quickly.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's such a nightmare.
But also, Kyburn's like, really? That. You want to do this? You want to say it three times?
Why not a fourth? No. But, you know, she says, he'll come. I know he will. He must. Jamie is my only hope, which then only adds to the drama of him tossing it into the fire. And it's like the final straw for Cersei in A Feast for Crows. So
it's a Star Wars quote.
It really be like that sometimes.
It's Leia appealing to Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Exactly.
Lean. Put in the disc.
Oh my God.
Put in the floppy disk.
Imagine Obi-Wan Kenobi would suddenly be like, fuck this.
Right? He's like, I don't want to deal with this. That would be crazy. I actually just saw Rogue One and saw like the moments before that. So neat.
Had you not seen it before?
I didn't. I wanted to see it in theaters, really? And I missed it, and so I kept putting it off.
Interesting. We just watched Solo, and my partner was
How
like,
was that?
Oh, my favorite part is when my partner goes like, "Who's that girl? Where do we know her from?" And I turned to him, I'm like, Daenerys Targaryen. He's like, oh my god, shut up. He's like, I know you're super pleased about this, but
wow, you just invited you to say the right stuff immediately. It was so funny. That's cool. So how was she in that? Sidebar.
I think she was actually good. I thought she was a pretty good actress in terms of the role she gave her. I don't know where she's going. There's some continuity issues, in my opinion.
With that film? People say some negative stuff about that.
It's all right. It's like an okay film. It's fine. It's not great. I think they also had a lot of production issues from what I remember, because I remember seeing that they're like, yeah, we switched out this director. Oh, wait, we switched out the director again.
Yeah, I remember that.
So they had a lot of issues, but it's okay. Sorry, off topic again.
I mean, yeah, but you know, it's all some kind of artistic rendition of stuff. I mean, not everyone could be as good as George R. R. Martin. Not everyone can, like, give us that slow drip like he does. Like, good Lord, to do that. And it's also, just to remind everyone, when you have the universe in front of you, then it all, like, is a bit more shallow than what it is. Like, imagine we were doing this podcast or this conversation, like, you're having the same one with your friends. And maybe some of you did have this. A lot of you probably did. when there was no A Dance with Dragons. And, like, this was the last book. And so in another chapter after the Jamie chapter and then after the Samwell chapter, I believe that's the last one. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. it. So it's like, that is a cliffhanger. Like Jamie throwing that letter in the fire, it's huge. Yeah,
it's huge.
These are huge moments. Like that's a big thing for Jamie, and that's a big thing for Cersei. Like it's huge. It's massive.
He's her last hope.
I'm going to read the opening paragraph from the Jamie chapter. Are you guys cool with that?
Please.
Yeah.
The new Lord of Riverrun was so angry that he was shaking. "We have been deceived," he said. "This man has played us false." Pink spittle flew from his lips as he jabbed a finger at Edmure Tully. "I will have his head off. I rule Riverrun by the king's own decree. I..." "Emmon," said his wife. This is paragraph 2. I'm just going to keep going. "The Lord Commander knows about the king's decree. Sir Edmure knows about the king's decree. The stable boys know about the king's decree. I am the Lord, and I will have his head." Anyway, Emmon Frey. There's comical, a drawing of him online if you guys want to Google it. It's fantastic. Eliana found it for us.
No, that was Edmund. That was Edmund.
Was it? Okay, well, you can pretend that it was Emmon Frey.
I'm sure there's a drawing of Emmon
Frey. Oh, there is.
He's probably, yeah, he's way more important than us.
He looks like a guy.
This is the one I looked up. Spittle. Hold on. Emmon Frey. There we go.
He looks like Evil Kif from Futurama.
Do you think that this was made by the same guy who drew Futurama?
He did a bunch of them.
Who decides?
The Ryman. I don't know. We can ask Nathanian.
Like, who decides what he looks like? Because there's no description of him other than his pink spittle. I'm sure there is somewhere, but...
I tried to find the...
I'll ask.
The rights or the... What's the word I'm looking for?
Artists.
Yeah, and I clicked on the picture and there was like a bunch of updates to the thing. If you are listening to this and you made, or if you know the person who made this artist rendition of Emmon Frey, or Edmund Frey, for that matter. They're both equally beautiful.
But he did a lot of them. I've seen it before as DeviantArt, but his name escapes me and I'm too lazy to Google it.
Well, did you just say that he did like all the Freys?
No, he didn't do all the Freys. He just did like a bunch of pictures, not just those. He's done ones of a bunch of other characters. Like, he's definitely done a Strong Belwas, because I know everything about Strong Belwas. There is no...
Stuog. Emmon is a small man, thin and nervous, and mostly bald. The sullen Emmon has a prominent apple in his throat. And he's got a prominent chip on his shoulder at the beginning of this chapter, slash all the Jamie chapters outside of Riverrun, but this one's probably the most gratuitous. George is like, hey, it's Jamie's last chapter. I'm going to lay everything on a little bit thick. His wife really doesn't like him. No one really likes him. And he's going to hold Riverrun all for a few weeks slash a few months, because the snow is already falling and they don't have that much provisions. And I don't think he really knows about what to do. What do you guys think?
God bless Gemma Frey.
Yeah, right.
Gemma Lannister. My one note here apparently at the very beginning is just Emmon Frey sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of does. What I wrote. I feel bad for Jamie just having to deal with everything that's just like the first two pages is just filled with so much drama that he has to deal with, from Emin's little tantrum to everything that's going on with Brendan being escaped through the river and Edmure, you know, out here doing his thing, being so pleased with himself.
I'm not here for Edmure being pleased with himself.
Yeah?
I'm here to defend my son, Edmure Tully.
Oh, really?
Welcome to my TED Talk.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Hi, I'm Edmure Tully's mom. We finally made it here. I'm Anissa Wendt, and I gave birth to Edmure Tully.
Wait, so please tell us about... So Edmure basically lets Brendan go.
Yeah.
And helps him escape.
It's amazing. It's classic Edmure Tully shit, though. Like...
Fish so, swim, even black ones.
Exactly. And I mean, like, he's so pleased with himself. And glad that he is. It kind of sucks when he stops being pleased with himself. I think he should have been cheeky the entire time. That's just my feeling.
That threat, though, that Jamie gave him about the word that no one knows how to pronounce unless they're from the place that they made it. It's Ubié, isn't it?
What?
I don't know. Ubié.
Can I see this word? Like, what are... Oubliette.
Ooh, much better.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know. I just feel like this is classic Edmure Tully because I'm just going to read it aloud.
Go for it. Yeah. Read as much as you like.
This is a TED Talk after all.
This is your TED Talk.
Drinks. I'm an editor, everyone. We're hanging out.
Hey, man. Fish swim, all right? It's just, these are simple facts, okay? We all know what happens when fish swim. They keep swimming.
Yeah.
That's what Dory says.
Exactly. She's the best.
She's pretty cool, yeah.
But yeah, so Edmure kind of finds a sort of loophole in terms of handing over Brendan Blackfish because, like, Emin's going wild. He's just like, we're gonna punish Edmure Tully. And Edmure Tully's like, for what crime? Thin as he was, Edmure still looked more lordly than Emin Frey.
Yeah.
He wore a quilted doublet of red wool with a leaping trout embroidered on its chest. His boots were black, his breeches blue. His auburn hair had been washed and barbered, his red beard neatly trimmed. Like, where is he getting this barber? Sorry, while in prison, just asking questions. I did all that was asked of me. Oh, Jamie Lannister had not slept since Riverrun had opened its gates and his head was pounding. I do not recall asking you to let Ser Brendan escape.
Jesus.
And Edmure goes, you required me to surrender my castle, not my uncle. Am I to blame if your men let him slip through their siege lines? And what I love about it is, like I said, it's classic Edmure Tully. In A Storm of Swords, he's given... directions from Rob and Brendan of hold River Run.
Yeah.
And he's not given any more. And the way that Edmure interprets it, like, I love that he's like, my people, they were afraid. He goes out there and he defends his lands.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Rob and Brendan were like, that's not what we wanted you to do because we wanted Tywin Lannister to head west so that he would not be able to return to King's Landing and that would have divided the forces and weakened them.
Mm-hmm.
But Edmure cared about the people who were his vassals, and he was acting as a lord and trying to protect them.
Hmm.
And it wasn't the letter, what was in the letter of the law, but he went above and beyond that. And that's what I think happens here in terms of what he's doing by letting Brendan escape. He's like, I wasn't told not to let Brendan Blackfish escape. And in doing so, he's doing something that helps his cause that is righteous by letting his uncle go past. And he's like, that's not quite right. And sure, as you said, Jamie comes back and he's like, all right, well, we'll put your wife with your unborn son next to you. And then Edmure, as you see, demurs after that. He's like, all right, well, this is what happened. He's like, I don't know. He doesn't feel any guilt, I think, necessarily revealing that information because Brendan's long gone. But
yeah,
that's the Tully house words, right? Family, duty, honor. And Rosalind Frey and his unborn child are his family now. And when that threat is put forth, Edmure's living up to that. That's how I feel about Edmure Tully.
Word.
Well, and I think that's interesting because where is it pretty quickly after they're having this conversation? Oh my gosh, it just signed me out of Kindle Cloud Reader. Anyway, he's talking about how, yeah, well, Jamie didn't really check until the next morning anyway. Like amidst the chaos of this handover and everything that's going on. He's like, a moonless night, bored guards and a black fish in a black river floating quietly downstream. ... In the confusion of the castle changing hands, it been the next morning before Jamie had even been informed that the Blackfish was not amongst the prisoners. So It's also, I guess maybe it is a little bit on Jamie.
It's totally,
like,
oh,
their
totally.
Most prized possession yeah. to like not even be checked on until the next day.
What you just said about him, and this is his family. Like,
yeah.
Of course that's what he was going to do. And he like put himself at risk because it's not like the Kingslayer and all of the rest of the Lannisters are above just unjust punishment. It's not like he thought True. That nothing was going to happen. He's supremely lucky that Jaime's trying to turn over this new leaf right now.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, this oubliette, you called it? I'm going to read this quote.
I don't know what that is, but I just said the word aloud. You showed me the word. I was like, this is how you say it.
It's that torture box. I'll read it. Fish swim, even black ones. Edmure smiled. First off, all right. You don't have to smile at him, though. You know what I'm saying?
Anyway. I mean, I'd be proud of my uncle for doing that. He just swam down the river.
That's like, true. Yeah. You're right. It's not like he made him do it.
That's
so
my
I
uncle.
Would smile, too. You're right. You're right.
That's my uncle.
That's your uncle,
That's
Zach.
My uncle, That's too. Uncle. That's my uncle, too.
I'm proud of him. All right. Jaime was sorely tempted to crack him across the mouth with his golden hand. So he's using the golden hand to his advantage. Right? He's like, this is gold, motherfucker. This is harder than my normal hand. This yeah. is going to hurt. A few missing teeth would put an end to his smiles. For a man who was going to spend the rest of his life a prisoner, Edmure was entirely too pleased with himself. Jaime says, we have ubiles beneath the casterly rock that fit a man as tight as a suit of armor. That's tight. You can't turn in them or sit or reach down to your feet when the rats start gnawing at your toes. I'm going to add in or wipe your ass. Would you care to reconsider that answer? Lord Edmure's smile went away. And then he says, you gave me your word that I would be treated honorably as befits my rank. And then Jaime says, so you shall. Nobler knights than you have died whimpering in those ubiles, and many a high lord too, even a king or two, if I recall my history. Your wife can have the one beside you if you like. I would not want to part you. And all of a sudden, Jaime, that pushed Bran out of the window, is right back. In a shadow version. So,
yeah.
I mean, like, he's someone that we relate to in a lot of levels when it comes to like treating people in a fair manner, it seems like, in the past couple books. And maybe that shouldn't be like an impressive thing, but that's kind of like how all people should be, hopefully.
It's like base level, kind
of. Right. Yeah. But it's been like that for a while, even among a lot of the hardship. Like, even at the first half of him learning about the Blackfish escaping. But right now he's like, dude, don't smile about it, though, because I might put you in this crazy torture chamber with your wife and your unborn kid. So what do you think? So there's still that. So there's still some edge to him. There's still some potential for him to don a Valyrian spike and kill some White Walkers. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or like a Valyrian blade at the end of his stump or something. What do you think? You think it's going to be a spike or a knife?
I haven't thought this through. Yeah, but now that
just like obsidian.
Now that you bring it up, now I'm just thinking of like fucking, what was it? Is it Evil Dead or Army of the Dead?
Oh, I love all of House of the Dead.
Yeah, all of it. He just is like, he replaces his hand, right? With like a chainsaw or something.
I don't know enough about Evil Dead.
I feel really bad about this. I don't know which one it is, but I don't know. Some sort of blade. Imagine that, but Valyrian.
The only thing I know about Evil Dead is the promiscuous tree. That's all I remember.
Oh my God.
Clearly, it's like the most interesting part of it, but... Anyway, Valyrian spike. That's crazy.
Could be a thing.
I mean,
what if he just touches? What if he doesn't even make a spike? What if he just makes like a Valyrian hand and he just like touches them?
Reaches out and touches like, the White Walkers.
Delicately. That would be so awesome.
That would be awesome. Or he could just bitch slap them and just shatter them into pieces.
Or just poke them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has like a. Maybe it's like a middle finger. It's made to the middle finger. He just flips them off. And like it's like Sauron. He just like blankets of them. Just like just destroy them once. Anyway, Jamie's still pretty tough, anyway. Is what I'm trying to say. After the trouble Sir Brendan took to leave us, I doubt that he'll come skulking back, unless it is at the head of a band of outlaws. He did not doubt that Brendan Blackfish meant to continue the fight.
In a band of outlaws,
Yeah, I've heard of some outlaws that are skulking around Nocturne Alley.
Never heard of these outlaws Interesting. Before in my life.
With maybe some familial ties.
So Thomas Sevenstreams is there. He's their bard, and I'm going to skip right to the meat of this. What do you guys make of that? I mean, obviously, he's the guy who's been piping everyone with the information as far as the Lady Stoneheart crew, as far as where Merritt Frey's headed, where Ryman Frey's headed, presumably, with the crown.
I think that's exactly it.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? You just laid it all out.
Laid it all out there. Yeah.
There's
not
it.
Much. So what are your opinions on the truth, guys?
the truth is very true.
That's how you podcast, right?
I mean, I guess like the only question we could ask is like what his motivation, like personal motivation is to be in that situation. And it's probably not really necessarily anything, but.
He's part of like.
But that's what he's doing.
Kingsman.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just like, this is my gang. It's I'm a in it.
Ballsy thing to do, though.
Is it?
Don't you think? To put yourself right in the midst of danger and to have your weapon be like how high you can sing. Doesn't he's like, I can't sing as good as that other guy, but I'm trying to stick around.
I mean, he's a bard. He's a singer. Like the whole thing is like he's good at lying because so in Dungeons and Dragons, which George R. R. Martin has lots of experience playing, obviously Thomas Seven Strings has a high charisma stat.
Yeah.
And therefore every time he rolls for deception, he's like he's got it made.
Mm-hmm.
Even against someone as like discerning as Jamie Lannister here at the end.
Sometimes the rolls work that way.
Wow.
Also he's a bard, so you can just fade into the background.
Also like, true.
People are just going to be able to have conversations with this guy playing music in the back. You can overhear anything. Yeah. I'm sure it's a super like lucrative business to be a spy when you're in that position. So many people are going to dismiss who you are. So
especially all this changing the guard stuff and like chaos putting Edward Tully up on a...
Yeah.
Like, I want to hang him today, maybe, everybody. Yeah. They're not checking out the bards probably that much.
For sure, so...
This is like a really like hellish situation for everyone to be in. Although it seems like Jamie's coming out on top. He didn't have to kill someone he really respected. I know he's mad about him escaping, but don't you think that somewhere deep down he's stoked about the Blackfish like not being killed?
Well, he says at a point near the end of the chapter where he says he's feeling curiously content. The war was all but won. And it says, let me actually find it specifically and read it, because he talks about wanting to get back to King's Landing and Tommen ruling and needing to find Blackfish before he gets back, but that he was feeling like they were on the upswing in terms of this war that had been going on. Oh yeah, here we go. Still he felt curiously content. There's a lot of stuff going on. Still he felt curiously content. The war was all but won. Dragonstone had fallen and Storm's End would suit enough. He could not doubt, and Stannis was welcome to the wall. The Northmen would love him no more than the Stormlords had. If Roose Bolton did not destroy him, Winter would. Goes on and on. And he had done his own part here at Riverrun without actually, as you're saying, ever taking up arms against Starks or Tullys, which is a huge victory in and of itself. Once he found the Blackfish, he would be free to return to King's Landing where he belonged. My place is with King, with my son. Would Tommen want to know that? The truth could cost the boy his throne. So I think that he feels pretty optimistic about his position because... he was able to fulfill all of his different oaths and promises and duties all at once in a very sticky situation. And I mean, I know that he lost Blackfish, but...
just a guy.
He's just a guy. I don't know. I think that things could have been much, much, much worse.
It's kind of like the Myrnese stuff and like whatever... Mm-hmm. Whatever they're trying to save over there, it's like, man, we're not going to be there much longer, probably. It's like at the end of this chapter, when he realizes that winter is so swiftly approaching, it's like, you're going to hold this place for an X amount of time. Like, there's momentum in this world that's beyond all these petty squabbles. And that's been part of the backbone of the story for such a long time. But it's coming to a head when there's snow falling in Riverrun, you know, big pieces of snow, big ones he stepped on. It was like, did I just, you know, step on someone, like, leave, like, a like someone's dog piss on the floor or something? Is that what this is?
Well, there's snowflakes falling on the note that he gets from Cersei. I mean, that... I felt like that passage in and of itself was super... one of those ones that you want to, like, write on a note card and put on your wall. It's just...
get a couple of those in here.
I know. It's just like, you know, Jamie's note, and then we get, does my lord wish to answer? The maester asked. After a long silence, a snowflake landed on the letter. As it melted, the ink began to blur. It's just such a beautiful... yeah. Description of, you know, not only his feelings in the matter, but just the atmosphere, as you talked about,
world.
The weather,
the world,
and what's actually going, this overarching idea of like what's actually happening versus what truly matters versus like what's going on in drama that is just going to be all pushed aside once we get to the real battle. And so I just thought that was really beautifully put.
I feel like everyone needs a pee, but there's a few more things that I want to talk about before we go. I can tell. I can see in your eyes. Everyone's eyes are flowing.
Oh, I was also thinking Did you want me to just write you random letters that say, I love you, I love you, I love you?
Only if you do it three times.
You can like put them all up on your wall, please.
You got some wall space here. There's
yeah, you do.
Room. I do have a lot of wall space.
There's a lot of room for me to say I love you several times.
Yes.
Please, you got kind of like a Hogwarts portrait thing going on, almost.
Mm-hmm. Except, you know, less faces, but the amount of photos. It'd be interesting. Mm.
I have a gallery wall.
That's what it is. Like that's what it is.
That's not like a crazy thing to have in a house.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Anyway, back to the subject at hand. Sybil Westerling / Spicer with the plan with Tywin and you know, Jane Westerling and the moon tea and all the complications there. Do you guys think that the... Like, I guess the bureaucracy that Jaime's handling on behalf of the Lannisters, because someone has to, because Tywin's dead and he's the guy that's there. Do you
but
guys,
Tywin is still, as he says, kind of like moving the pieces.
Still moving these pieces. First off, side question. How much do you think she's making up about what Tywin promised her?
Oh, at least like half of it.
Right?
I haven't actually thought that. Yeah.
I think she's being real in the beginning. Like, I think her first couple asks are pretty real, but then she, like, starts to ask more and more and more.
And he said,
more.
I get, like, a free cask of Arbor Gold every week, too, yeah, or exactly. Something crazy.
She starts, like, tacking things on. But
you're
she doesn't
right.
really have anything
you're
to
right.
lose.
I mean, she did some pretty important things. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, she kept the young wolf from fathering a child, which is a pretty big deal.
Oh, Jane Westerling in this chapter just broke my dang heart.
Yeah, she's really upset about the whole situation.
As she rips her cloak, I'm just like, wow.
She's like, it was my crown.
Yeah.
She was so in love. I was like, oh man, I've been a surly, brokenhearted teen once too.
I was a queen.
I was like, that boy did not care as much about you as you did about him, but I respect the feelings that you had, Jane Westerling.
Oh,
that's you
funny.
Know what I mean?
It's funny to hear Jamie's description of her. He's like, she's pretty, but she's not worth losing kingdoms over. She's kind of nice, but pretty enough for a child, but not a girl to lose a kingdom for.
There had to have been some there, guys. It was love, you know? She couldn't have been lust. Come on. Love, right?
They were 16. They don't know anything.
You're right. Let's just trust Tommen to guard the realms of men, everybody. What do you guys think?
He's not really guarding anything.
He's just going to make all his stamps and it's going to make everything good.
Do you think it's going to matter in the story? Like any of that will unfold and inform any
I think
pieces?
There's, I don't know. I think there's something interesting. Like you were talking about Tywin and I was like, damn, Tywin just didn't give a shit about any of his allies.
Mm, no.
Because like you were saying, Sybil Spicer was promised all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out, this is the chapter where we find out like, oh, the entire time Jane Westerling was a plant from her mother. Like Jane, we see, obviously wasn't complicit in it.
Right.
She like seems to have really been into Rob. And I mean like,
can you blame her?
If he looked like Richard Madden, like, can you blame her?
I just saw a picture of him recently and I realized how handsome he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Love that guy.
It's like more handsome than other people.
Yeah.
Like most other people.
More handsome than other people.
But like, everyone talks about Jon Snow being the guy and it's like, that's because Rob's dead, y'all.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I'm right there.
We Game of Thrones, I guess.
Yeah, we're Rob Stark girls over here.
So he's just Richard got like Madden. A like sort of like a perfect deal, right?
I mean, he's like obviously like way older than like us. Rob Stark would have been like, I'm not like trying to like do anything with 16 year olds that are like idiots and children.
I get it.
Yeah, but like
you said, Richard Madden.
But Richard Madden.
Yeah.
Richard Madden's playing a man with gray hair and like the fucking what is it? The Medicis, right?
It's different. So he's totally good then. Anyway, really, he's doing Medicis.
He was in that. Yeah, I didn't watch that.
I just read the Da Vinci biography, and so like they're all over it. Anyway,
he's like a prominent role in that. It's on Netflix.
Very interesting. I wonder if he was painted nude. They did a lot of nude paintings back then.
Oh my god.
This is like quickly spiraling.
Oh my god. Anyway, sorry. So Sybil Spicer, and then she was in cahoots with Tywin this entire time, and she's basically like pimping out her daughter to Robb Stark to bring about his downfall, but she's like the only other person like who was on this part of the plan who knew this, because as we find out, Walder Frey was not, because mm-hmm. she's all like, so what about my son Reynald?
Yep.
And then Jamie's like, that's a great question, because I don't Walder Frey, I don't think was informed of this plan at all. And like Tywin intentionally would not have let Walder Frey in on this part of the plan, because for Walder Frey's response to be as severe as it was in regards to the Red Wedding, he had to have legitimate feelings of spite Mm-hmm. I had to have those legitimate feelings of being offended by Rob eschewing this Frey alliance for this Westerling girl. And that just shows you how much Tywin just didn't give a shit. And that means including, like, the sacrifice. Not sacrifice, but, like, he just saw Reynold Westerling. He's like, I don't give a shit about that boy. He's just a casualty in my plans. And...
which is interesting because I feel like Tywin is so often, especially like in my view and conversation, boiled down into this mastermind of being able to kind of like manipulate situations and really set his family up for success. But when that's like such a watered down version of like the minutia of it all. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
this is like a big plan too. This wasn't a side plan.
Right. Yeah.
He put a lot at stake on this.
He was winning the war or trying to win the war through letters, as we see
Cersei visiting, Tyrion visiting.
Yeah.
In a clash.
Or like Otto, I'm going back to Fire and Blood. Otto Hightower trying to do, and then Aegon II was like, fuck that. We need blood. And like brings out his brother Aemon II. Aemon, that was stupid. But Otto Hightower is trying to do that. But that had nothing to do with anything. Sorry. But that's the connection.
I mean,
that's the connection that I saw. I've had no dinner. last time I ate was like 9 a.m.
Oh, Jesus. No. All right.
You're doing
great. Otto Hightower, RIP.
I think the last piece of this chapter that we really need to dive into, in my humble opinion,
I'm interested to hear what you say.
Is Jamie's dream at the end.
Oh, I was going to mention Ellen Payne too, but yeah, the dream's good.
Oh yeah, Ellen Payne. And then are we coming back to the letter?
We go to the dream.
Yeah, I think the Ellen Payne thing is something that we could just mention as being a great moment.
That's in the pretty chapter. Much all I wanted to say.
But I think that
for like 5 minutes, go on.
I think that this dream is interesting, and we can probably dissect it much more eloquently or like much longer, but it is interesting and I'm curious to hear what you guys' thoughts are on it.
I thought that Jaime Lannister has come face to face with a lot of facts recently, and that this has been a transformative chapter for him.
We all dream of things we cannot have.
That's better.
That was a good quote.
Tywin dreamed his son would be a great knight, that his daughter would be a queen. Da, 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 da. I am a knight and Cersei is a queen. A tear rolls down the woman's cheek and she leaves.
And yet.
Was this like a real...
Yeah, like do we think that this is something that has already happened, or it's like a prophecy of what's eventually the fate of Cersei and Jaime is there?
To me, it sounds like Jamie's been coming face to face with the truth a lot lately, and he learned a lot about who he was when he came face to face with the Blackfish recently, and about where he stood among men, which is what he's been trying to figure out this whole time, because he never really stood where he wanted to with his father, because his father reserves that for no one. His father just really gave that to no one. So that was a really interesting insight into how he governed his family as a father, and how he restricted the idea of anyone like taking light of themselves, and he hated the idea of being laughed at. And I think that that makes me understand his relationship with Tyrion so much more. And Tyrion was the kind of guy that would do triple backflips and do cartwheels across the table and make like extended family laugh. Tywin had a different idea of what was acceptable at that time, and it makes me understand his relationship with his son more, and also with Cersei more, and their sort of like cloistered upbringing and the restrictions based off of not wanting to let down someone that they respected so much, because at the same time he was someone that was giving them so much and they were smart enough to realize that and they didn't want to let him down, and they developed in some really, I would say, like harrowing ways. I don't know if that's the right word, but they developed in some ways that their mother would not be proud of. And I think that if she would have been there, that there would have been some balance in their family, you know? And I think that that had a lot to do with the tear. I think that she would be proud, but I think that the point is not rising to the idea of like what your zenith like could be ego-wise. Like everyone regards you a certain way. Like, and I think that a lot of really wise people know that, and a lot of really dumb people like me don't know that very well until they hear like wise people talk about it in books a whole lot. But a mother of those two Lannister children, more married to Tywin Lannister, more than likely like knew those things, and it could have been helpful for those kids to have someone like that around to sort of guide them on the right path. It's not just about the title. It's about the person that you are within it. Mm-hmm. I think that Jamie's learning that now, and that's why he throws the letter in the fire.
Yeah.
It's hard, but he's trying to do things for real.
Yeah.
You know?
What you're saying connects back to what he was talking about, because you also brought up his conversations with Ellen Payne. He keeps coming back to, like, well, this fucking person in the book of... Well, what is the name of this book? I don't know.
The White Book?
Yeah, The White Book did X thing, and this other person did X thing. And he's just trying to live up to that. I think that it's fine for Joanna to be sad, but also it's not... I mean, even if someone's a single parent, at the same time, it's still, like, their responsibility to take care of, like, their
right.
kids.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a tinfoily question I'm going to throw out there, but is it interesting that Joanna says Tywin dreamed that his son would be a great knight and his daughter would be, like, I don't know, X, like, insert adjectives here, something queen, but she doesn't mention anything about what Tyrion would have been.
Yeah.
Because would Tywin not have dreamed, regardless of whatever, like, Tyrion would have been a great lord or whatever?
You mean Jaime in that moment? Or the mom?
Just Joanna doesn't bring it up.
Do you think it might be because she died giving birth to him, so she didn't have time to, like, formulate opinions, or...
That's true.
Or it's just idea of how
yeah.
Tyrion is viewed as in the less family. Than. Is yeah. yeah, somebody who's not really
yeah.
one of their... true siblings for whatever.
That'd be a really interesting question to ask George R. R. Martin when this is all over. Like, if is it just like Jamie's mind having a dream, so he's like processing the things that are real into like a more figurative nature, or is this more of like a figurative message from the ether like Ned gets or something?
I just think that if it were Jamie processing his own subconscious, Tyrion would have been in it, because we see from
that's
Tyrion's
true.
Subconscious that
yeah,
Jamie manifests
to, yeah.
so often yeah. in his dreams. He dreams of himself as something like I want to say it was Maelor Blackfyre or something like that. And he's like has two heads and one of them is crying when he's fighting against Jaime.
Yeah.
And Jaime doesn't have dreams like that about Tyrion, or not with Joanna in them.
Right. One, I mean, Tyrion is in Jaime's subconscious. So as he like yeah. often thinks about like what would Tyrion have maybe done in this type of situation, or mm-hmm. what kind of joke would he have maybe made? So,
did he make yeah, a Tyrion like reference, like choking someone out with their necklace in this chapter?
He did. Yeah, he yes, did. Yeah. Right. I was thinking the same thing. It was yeah. like Sybil regarding her seashell
yeah.
necklace.
Yeah. There yes. you go.
Let
yeah.
me just let me choke you out. It's like, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point. I think when it comes to if this was Jaime's like own self-manifestation, somebody like Tyrion would so absolutely be in it.
What does it mean though? Like you asked the question, like what do you think that can mean? You just like I see what you're saying. I mean, like throw it out there.
Yeah, I like to throw things out there.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I mean the Winds of Winter is coming out next week, right?
Yeah, next week, everybody.
Next week.
Wow. Well, okay, let's do Owens. Let's do that. Let's I just want to talk about the Ellen Payne thing really quick. I know I'm kinda doing it out of order, but
that's what I want to give my own to.
I love that so much. It was just like, I've really enjoyed those times that he's had. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it.
Awesome.
That night,
more owns have come in.
Oh, awesome. Perfect. We tweeted it not too long ago. Thank you so much, everyone, for writing us quickly, because we were afraid we weren't going to be able to read any. Now that that's out, let's read this. That night, he and Sir Ellen fought for 3 hours. It was one of his better nights. If they had been in earnest, Payne would have only killed him twice. Half a dozen deaths were more the rule, and some nights were worse than that. If I keep at this for another year, I might be as good as Peck, Jamie declared. And Sir Ellen made that clacking sound, meant he was amused. Come, let's drink some more Hoster Tully's good red wine. That's a really warm moment for me, first off. I'm like, let's please hang out with Ellen Payne and drink some of Hoster Tully's good wine. Wine had become part of their nightly ritual. Sir Ellen had made the perfect drinking companion. He never interrupted, never disagreed, never complained or asked for favors or told long, pointless stories. All he did was drink and listen. I should have the tongues removed from all of my friends, said Euron Greyjoy. No, sorry. Said Jaime as he filled their cups, and from my kin as well. A silent Cersei would be sweet, though I'd miss her tongue when we kissed. He drank. I don't think I need to say anymore. So it's all out in the open right now with the boys just sword fighting.
Like, he really leaves it out in the open.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Him.
Yeah.
He invites him just to make fun of him for mm-hmm. having sex with his sister on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. I love their
you,
little.
I love you. I love you.
I love you three times forever.
Three I times. I love their little dynamic. Nice. All right. Also, what's our own owns?
Own to Brandon Blackfish for escaping, too.
Yeah, but we're That's not. Are we at Owens yet?
Oh, wait, is that Owens? Yeah, I was like, that's
is
my,
that your own?
Yeah, it's my Ellen Payne, Jamie chapter.
Wait, I wanted that to be my own.
Oh, you can own whatever you'd like.
Cool,
please. I'm in your house after all.
That's my own.
We
too.
Are in your house.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
That's my own too. For the Jamie chapter.
Thanks for giving us all of your. Do you have a whole drawer of refreshments? And thanks for free access to that.
I have a whole drawer of diet soda.
Yeah, right on.
My owns for both when this opens is I want to give an own to both the Watts in Cersei and Jamie. So we got two singers. They're both named Watt. W-A-T Watt. And the Watt in the Cersei chapter is the Blue Bard who's being tortured. And the Watt in the Jamie chapter is Watt White Smile, who's, I guess, a singer in the employ of House Lannister. But I just think it's so funny that both of them are singers named Watt.
What?
Name Watt. And, like, these chapters are right one after the other. I don't think it's, like...
On accident?
Not necessarily. I don't know if it means anything so much as, like, well, this is funny, right?
Yeah.
But that's where my own goes.
That's awesome. Love it.
Nice.
What?
Nice. It's like the way they spell it, like when you're playing RuneScape or something.
Yeah. I like definitely say that to you. Sometimes they say something, I'm like, what?
What? It's like the insolent what. It's like, mm-hmm. You know you can give them attitude because they deserve it. Mm-hmm. What?
What? So.
I'm going to give my own in the Cersei chapter 2, Marjorie Tyrell, who's out there doing work.
She is.
And I love that about her. That even though her whole family is out there doing work, she on her own by herself is in charge of her own fate as much as she possibly can. I love that about her. So own to Marjorie.
She deserves it.
Yeah, she does.
Okay, then I'll just say this is a great way to transition. And what do we think for the Cersei 10 chapter, Cersei's final chapter?
Wait, oh shit, I just did it again.
What are you doing?
What are you? Just say your own. We
thank
already
you.
Said
thank
our
you.
Own.
Thank you. Thank you. Jesus.
Zachary. I'm is fucked. That even your real name?
Yes, it is.
Zachariah.
That's Zachary is my name.
Zacharia.
I'll take Zacharia. I'm like from Dorne, though. That's my name, right?
or Arya plus Zach.
That's true. I was thinking of like, anyway, that's neither here nor there. my own for the Cersei chapter goes to the High Sparrow for saying no. He just goes, no. It echoes. No. I don't think she's ever heard that word before in a serious way, but I'm sure she has. That's a silly thing to say, but not like that. Not like that.
So those are our owns. And it's time to read all of yours.
Let's do it.
All right. So for our first set of owns comes from Heathen King, a.k.a. Grant. And he has owns for both the Cersei and Jaime chapters. He goes, own for the Cersei chapter goes to the Bastard of Driftmark, who got himself a new fleet. He says that three times, just like I love you. He says, hashtag get them ships.
Oh, yeah.
And then next, he says, own for the Jamie chapter goes to Sir Reynold Westerling, the Seashell Knight. That's in all caps, so I wanted to emphasize that. And complete badass who released Grey Wind on the phrase and probably escaped and survived the Red Wedding. I mean, he's basically Batman. And then he also, I recommend checking out this tweet because he posts an artwork from Sanrixian of Sir Reynold.
Oh, that's such a good own.
I forgot that Reynold did that.
I mean, when I read that and I read that he basically put himself in harm's way to defend the animal, I was like, okay, I like you.
Yeah, the Westerlings who are not Sybil.
And from Beauty Brienne on Twitter, this may be too soon to source both of your owns. We apologize ahead of time for that. Cersei own goes to Septa Scholera for making it through life with a name that sounds like a spinal affliction.
That's really good.
thought, Jamie gets his own for, oh, the Jamie owns in here. Jamie gets his own for treating Cersei's plea for her life like a forwarded political email from your grandpa. Ooh. Hashtag deleted.
These are good.
Can I read two owns in a row? Here we go.
Go for it. It's your house.
At P94 at home says, oh, wow, these are some of the best chapters in the series for me. Talking about the Brienne chapter from last episode and the Cersei chapter coming up, which amen to that. And then we've got Jerry from Mayo who says, Cersei owned the High Septon. He totally outmaneuvers Cersei, having her come willingly to the Sept, walk into his trap, and then snapping it shut. Secondary owned to...
Say it. Say it.
Who is it?
Secondary Onto. I don't know how to pronounce this name.
Arane Waters?
Yeah.
The last name is literally Waters.
It's Waters.
You're like 70%.
You may be more than that.
I'm sorry.
We like teamed up on him. Like, you don't even have to say Waters.
Waters, that thing that we need?
Yeah, I like Waters. It's really good.
R-E-N. Wait.
R-E-N.
R-E-N.
It's like a. I think it's Auran.
It's like an auror.
Yeah, like an auror. Yeah.
An auror, but Auran. Auran.
Got it. Got it. Thank you.
See, I can see nice. Hannah.
That was nice. That was nice. We had a translator. I was like, a moment.
I did.
It was like light at the end of a tunnel. Like, wait a second. That's how you do it.
Secondary own to Auran Waters, who harnesses Cersei's gullibility to get himself a whole fleet of ships paid for by the already heavily indebted crown.
Here's an own from Jonquil Dark. On Twitter, Cersei Own goes to Tyene Meriwether for making it out before everyone went pear-shaped. Jaime owned Sir Desmond Grell and Sir Robin Ryger for choosing to take the black. Hopefully, what they know will come up in T-Wow. And our final own from Amy Anderson on email. Thanks for sending your own to us, Amy. She writes, for the Cersei chapter, my own goes to the High Septon for getting to the truth and taking Cersei down. He saw right through Sir Osney Kettleblack. She wrote that with the Z, and I approve. It looks very interesting. Sir Osney Kettleblack. Then he walked Cersei right into his own cell to hear him confess which queen he really slept with. Hashtag Shifty Septon.
And there we have it. Almost the last chapters of A Feast for Crows.
Thanks for sending in your owns, everyone. Especially on such a short notice, we really appreciate that. And to all of you who sent your owns in back in 2K18 when we were maybe going to do the Brienne chapter and the Cersei chapter together. I'm really glad it turned out this way.
Yeah, it worked out really nicely. If you want to send in your owns next time, for the next time you record, you can find us on social media. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter, both of them at Game of Owns, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
Our next chapter is Daenerys 7 and maybe Jon 9. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. We'll let you guys know on Twitter or Instagram or something like that.
You can go to afeastofdragons.com, and if you look at the reading order, I mean, we've got one A Feast for Crows chapter left. It's pretty wild. So if you haven't gone to look at the reading order, and if you've just read based off of owns as they come in or things like that, you can head to afeastwithdragons.com and check that out.
Eliana, thank you so much for coming on this episode.
I know.
I just you really so need much. To go to the bathroom.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So who gets to go first is the real question. So
wait, before you go pee, will you please tell us where everybody can find you?
Please.
Plug all of your outlets.
Well, the bathroom. For starters. And yeah, so you can find me on the Maester Monthly podcast, where we talk about the greatest, latest hits, hot takes, etc. from the Song of Ice and Fire subreddit, where you can also find me as Glass Table Girl. And of course, you can find me every week on the Girls Gone Canon podcast, where we are doing a character reread. And maybe you'll find me as Arithmetric on Twitter. I'm not going to spell that. Good luck. It's fun.
It's for coming to hang out. You can with find us. Her on our, we can like retweet your stuff. So
whatever.
Eliana.
It's kind of fun sometimes.
We spelled that thing the last time you were on.
It's a trivia.
It's a hard word to spell.
Yeah. thanks for having me over. I love hanging out with you guys.
Brother. It's been really fun,
like recording too. Or not.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I feel like this recording session, we kind of forgot we were recording half the time.
And thanks to everybody for listening.
The season 8 hype train continues.